Luke chapter 6. And we are going to study what I think would be reasonable to call the hardest commandment. Extremely difficult here. And really what is the Sermon on the Plain, commonly called, and there's some similarities to the Sermon on the Mount. We've often looked at these commands and teachings of Jesus as somewhat simplistic and easy. You have Beatitudes and these sayings of those who are blessed will do these things. And here in Luke's account, we have woes against those who do things contrary. And what Jesus is doing in this teaching is trying to help us observe what His disciples look like. Remember, the context is that Jesus has these disciples who are following Him. He has just selected 12 apostles. He is now then given some difficult commands about, well, who are those who are going to be in His kingdom? It's going to be those who are poor and hungry and oppressed, because they're the ones who are going to seek after God. Those who are rich, they find their comfort in the things of this world, and they are not motivated to seek after God, and the riches become obstacles to those who will try to seek after His kingdom. And now we come into this next section of His teaching, and I want to just observe with you the three words that are, I think, just extraordinarily hard as He says these to the crowd. Verse 27 of Luke chapter 6. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. And I think that's the hardest thing Jesus probably said. Of all the things that we are told to do as Christians, this one, I think, is at the pinnacle of difficulty. Because we have a hard time loving our friends. We have a hard time loving our family. We have a hard time loving our neighbors. We have a hard time loving people who are in acquaintances, haven't done anything bad toward us, that we're just kind of neutral toward them. They haven't hurt us, but we're not close. We're not friends, anything like that. These three words are extremely challenging, especially in light of the context that I think Jesus is giving. Remember what He told His disciples. They're going to insult you. They are going to exclude you. They're going to do you harm. And I think verse 27 then is naturally bringing out to us, now how does the disciple react to that? What is a disciple supposed to do? And I will submit to you that our reaction is not the right reaction. Our default reaction is usually the complete wrong reaction of retaliation. Whatever you do to me, I'm going to do to you. And we think that's fair and just and right. Whatever you do to me, that's what I'm going to do back to you. You slug me, I slug you. You hurt me, I hurt you. We fight fire with fire. And I want us to consider that what Jesus is doing here in this text is extraordinarily challenging and is really countercultural, not only to our society, but even the society that existed back then. One of the writers of the first century said it like this. He said, I consider it established. This is like saying, this is a known fact. This is obvious. I consider it established that one should do harm to one's enemies and be of service to one's friends. And I think that's how we typically operate, and that's certainly how the world operates, and I just want us to see that things aren't any different 2,000 years later. They hurt me, I'll hurt you. Do good to me, I'll do good to you. Rub my back, I'll rub your back. And we just have a society that operates like that, and it was a society that operated then that Jesus is now preaching that's quite countercultural to say, no, those who are followers of me are not going to act like that. Now, what may be somewhat surprising to us is that this has been God's law all along. This is not something that is unusual. And sometimes we come into the teachings of Jesus and say, wow, you know, Jesus is doing something really different here in terms of the law of Moses. And that's not true. Jesus is actually affirming the law of Moses. He's teaching something countercultural to society. and countercultural to the way we often act and the way we think may be right or how we would want to react. But that's not countercultural in terms of what God has always taught. Over in Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 18, here the law of Moses was quite plain. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. But what the rabbis and the writers and the teachers did is they highlighted that word, your neighbor and your people, and said, well, you only have to do this to those who are your brethren, those who are Israel. It would be like for Jesus to say, all you need to do is love your brethren, your fellow Christians. That's essentially how they took the text. And Jesus comes along and is essentially going, no, you didn't get it right. You didn't get what Moses was saying there. You have misunderstood. Jesus, Moses, God, no, none of them ever said, only love those who love you. Only love those who do good to you. Only love those who are fellow Christians or fellow believers or the fellow people of God. And I submit to you to look at those three words. I want you to see it. Love your enemies. And really, that is the thesis of this whole paragraph, that he now is going to describe for us what that looks like. And I'm really glad that he does, because that's just awfully challenging to say. Now, what I need to do is love my enemies. I need to love those who hate me. I need to love those who do harm to me. I need to love those that persecute me and mistreat me. Well, what does that look like? What exactly is Jesus asking us to do? So let's read the rest and notice what he tells us. Verse 27. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. And so Jesus tells us what he's talking about. Here's what it looks like. Here's what he means when he tells us that we need to love our enemies. And I want us to observe that nowhere in the text does he say, now you're going to feel good about this. You know, somebody does something to mistreat you, you're just going to have warm feelings of happy thoughts that you're just going to want to go up and give them a hug. No. And I think it's important to observe that, because Jesus is not saying that you're going to feel great about what happens to you, that you're going to feel happy about things. But he's telling us how to respond. This is what it means to love. Not just feelings, that's not it. But a decision, an action. Here's what you are going to do. And he begins by saying to do good to those who hate you. And I think it's important to just underline that first phrase, because that puts a finger on something that we typically don't do. We usually think that we are doing good because we don't retaliate. I'm loving my enemies because I didn't respond the same way they responded to me. They did something bad, and I have been loving and good, and I have been righteous, and I have acted like a Christian because I didn't do something back. Well done, but we're only halfway there. Notice he doesn't say, to those who hate you, don't do bad things. He teaches a positive action. You and I are to do good to those who hate us. We are supposed to do something positive, not just simply refrain from evil, but do something good toward those who hate us. And there's no excuse given in this command. And if you're like me, what I want to do is, well, you don't know what they did. You don't understand the situation. You don't understand what they said. You don't understand how hurtful it was. You don't understand how much this person is my enemy. I mean, they're trying to destroy me. They're trying to just take me down. You don't understand the kind of pain that is being brought out. Notice that there's nothing brought out here by Jesus of unless this certain circumstance. Jesus uses a very powerful word. These are our enemies. And here is a person who hates you. He hates you. I don't want to do good by people who hate me. I think I'm doing pretty good by avoiding. just get away from me. I don't want to be around you. I'm just going to steer clear. I'm not going to do anything bad, but I'm sure not going to do anything good. I'll tell you that. There's no way I'm going to do something good. You're getting something good out of me by just me not retaliating. I want you to see the pressure that Jesus is putting here of it's not just simply don't do bad, but do good to those who hate you. He continues it, bless those who curse you, responding with words of grace and kindness. Not retaliating with violent, vicious words. That's what we want to do. You say something mean, I can spit one right back at you. I've got a sharp tongue. I've got a witty mind. You say something, I'll say something. And we'll exchange blows with our tongue. Don't do that. Visualize the person. Here's the person who hates you. And they are cursing you. They are maligning you. They are saying evil things about you. And Jesus says, don't curse back. And don't even just keep your tongue silent, but bless. Say good things. That's an amazing, disarming thing. The few times I've actually been able to pull that off, this hard command of saying something good when somebody says something awful. You know how much you take a person aback when you do that? You completely throw them off their game when you do that. It's amazing. It's just completely, they're just bewildered by, you just said something nice? I'm trying to destroy you. I'm throwing you in the mud and you just said something kind? You shock people when you do that. You really disarm them. You throw them for a loop when you say something that is good and kind. You say something that is nice, you just say, oh, thank you, okay, whatever you need to say in kindness back to them, I appreciate that, I'll keep that in mind, something kind. They're surprised by that. They're expecting retaliation. They're expecting a firefight to happen. And then perhaps even the most challenging of all is to pray for those who mistreat you. Pray for them. And he doesn't mean pray for God to rain fire and lightning down on the person. That's where my prayer, Lord, get them. You know, see my anger, see what they've done. He doesn't say that. Pray for their souls. Pray for their repentance. Pray for them to come to the Lord. Pray for them to understand that what they're doing is wrong. You know, one of the most fascinating examples of that is Stephen. Stephen blows my mind. Here he is being stoned. And he prays to God on their behalf. Surely somebody heard him say that. Don't hold it against them. Don't hold it against them. Wow. Pray for them. Pray for their soul. Pray for their repentance. Pray that they'll seek forgiveness. Pray that they will turn their heart to God. A love for the soul, love for that person. Not a love of me having to be right or to find my vindication, to find my justice. But we are showing a concern for the other person above all else. You see that in what Jesus is starting with here? Do good, bless, pray. For those who hate you, curse you, and mistreat you, do good, bless them, pray for them. This is not natural. This is not natural. This is not something that we wake up out of bed and go, that's what I'm going to do today. This is not easy. This is not the way we want to act. We have to fight against what seems natural within us and how we react and how we deal with people. And so it's important that Jesus, that we understand that Jesus is telling us really about self-control here and about a love for the other person to really see who the other person is. It's not just my enemy, but this is a soul and I need to do what is right by them. I need to do good by them. I need to say good things, even though they're not doing good by me. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn the other side. This is one phrase that has been, I think, greatly misconstrued. And some of the translations have strike on the cheek. I don't know that that's the right way to understand it. I think he's talking about slap on the cheek. This is idiomatic of an insult. I do not believe that Jesus is saying, if I come up to you and cold cock you on the mouth, you need to stand there and take a second one too. That's not what's going on here. This is a phrase that's idiomatic of talking about being insulted. That you get slapped in the cheek. In fact, that's an idiom that's really been held for quite a long time, except for maybe just recently. You had the visualization of the prim and proper man who has the white glove, who goes up to the person and whack in the cheek. That's not a painful thing. That's an insult. That's the whole idea behind the slap in the cheek, is that you are enduring an insult. And so what Jesus is driving at is you take the insult. You don't respond with the slap in the cheek. You don't insult them back. You don't put them down back. You don't shoot words at them back. If they're going to insult you, let him insult you. In fact, that's really the context. If you go back there in verse 22, what did he say there? Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you. That's what's going to happen. You're a disciple. People are going to hate you, exclude you, and insult you. And Jesus is saying, you endure that. You don't respond in kind. You don't respond insult for insult. You endure the insult. You accept the insult. Are you going to insult me? Oh, fine, go ahead and insult me. It's all right. I will not fight back. I will not respond in kind. That is the picture that is being described. This has often been a text used in terms of not being able to defend oneself. I don't think that's in view in the slightest. This is an idea of somebody is insulting you and harming you in that way. You take that insult. Go on and notice, if someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt. This is an illustration that we give even to people who are mistreating us. This doing of good also includes giving, of doing good things by giving to one another. Now, some understand this to be talking about like a street robbery, that someone comes up to you, takes your coat, and then you don't withhold your shirt either. I don't think that's what's being talked about here. I don't think that we need to understand the word take in terms of a forceful taking. I don't think that's the idea behind what Jesus is getting at. You talk about giving and taking. That doesn't have to be by force. I give, you take. You give, I take. I'm on the receiving end. I don't think this has to be understood in terms of force. The idea behind it is that I am more concerned about the person than I am about the preservation of my property. If you need a coat, I'm going to give you my shirt too. It's not about, well, this is my stuff, and so I'm only going to give what little I can possibly give. It's talking about even if people mistreat us, we are called upon to go above and beyond in our giving to them. That's what this doing of good looks like. Is I'm not just going to give you the bare minimum, but I'm going to do all sorts of good things for you. You need the coat? I'll give you the coat, but I'm going to give you my shirt too. You need $5 of gasoline? I'm going to give you $20 of gasoline. I'm not going to just give you the bare minimum. And this is again to those who mistreat us, to our enemies, that we are doing good above and beyond. Not just simply, well, I did a little bit of good, and so there you go. I've done some good. And I think that is the picture that Jesus is trying to give us, is that this is the context of how we are to love our enemies and how we are to perceive our property and our possessions and our wealth. Unfortunately, I think we often are unwilling to give to our friends. We're unwilling to give to our family. We're unwilling to give to those who are close to us or to our brothers and sisters in Christ. We become so stingy and tight with our possessions. This is mine, it is all mine, and I am unwilling to give. And if a brother or sister needs something, I'll give just enough to maybe meet the need. But I certainly wouldn't do that to my enemy. I'm not giving them a cent. They're getting what they deserve, but I'm not giving them a thing. I'm trying to illustrate that we have a hard time with this command to those people that we like. And he's talking about people who hate us, who mistreat us, who are our enemies. He's saying, do good to them. And don't just do good, give to them. And don't just give to them, go above and beyond. Give them more that's even being requested of you. Give even extra than what they may even actually need. Which is what leads to the, notice how that context works. Give to everyone who asks of you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Here is a picture of not only do you give, but you give in such a way that you aren't even expecting to get it back. Sometimes that's the way, only way we'll give. I'll give, but you better pay it back. And with interest. Okay, I'm being a good Christian because no interest. You just have to give it back. No. Give. Well, let's start beginning. Do good. Give. Give above and beyond. And don't expect anything in return. Don't expect it to be paid back. Don't expect them to give it back. Don't expect them to repay you with some sort of kindness. And that's typically how we work this in our mind. Is I do good to somebody, and maybe a month goes by, and they haven't done anything good or kind back. And so we grumble. A lousy person. You know, I helped that person out. Person know the kind of things that I had to sacrifice to give them this and that. Didn't even get a thank you. Didn't even repay me at all. Didn't even try to buy my dinner last week, even though I did all of this for them. You see how we go? This is what Jesus is driving at. Don't expect anything. Do good, give, give above and beyond, and don't expect a dime back. That's what it means to love your enemies. That's the picture that he is drawing out. And he's talking about people who hate you. I keep wanting to leave that behind. As we read this, don't you just want to... This is hard enough with our friends. We do this to people that we like. It's hard enough to give above and beyond and not expect anything back with our own brethren. He's not even talking about that. That's assumed. He's talking about your enemies. Give to the people who hate you. Give to them above and beyond. And give to them not expecting anything in return. You know what the very least I expect my enemy to do? Is be a lot nicer to me. And you don't even expect that. You just do good because that's the right thing to do. That's the Christian thing to do. That's why you do it. No other motivation. No other reason. And so often what we have is the selfish motivation. What we have is, well, I'm expecting something in return. There's going to be some kind of kickback off of this. That's why I'm going to do this. And we often make that financial evaluation. I will do it because I think this will have a positive benefit to my life. There'll be some sort of good that'll come to me by giving, by doing good. I want you to see that Jesus is trying to erase that out of the disciples' mind. We give because that's the right thing to do. not because there's some sort of evaluation that we go through the checklist and decide, you know what, that's going to work out good for me in the end. I'll do it. I think I'm going to get repaid. I'll do it. I think they'll start treating me better, so I'll do it. I think it's going to work out for me in the end, so I'll do it. Erase that. You just do it. And don't think about what it means to you. Just do good. You feel like it's the hardest commandment yet? He's not done. And I'm already crushed by what Jesus is saying. I'm already just completely in the ground by what Jesus is teaching here. I'm broken by these words. It's not natural. It's not normal. It's not human. We don't wake up and do this. He's telling us we must think completely differently. If we're really disciples of Jesus, it's not about us. It's about doing what is right to every single person, whether they are Christian or not, whether they are evil or not, whether they are good or not, whoever it is. I'm going to do good. I'm going to give. I'm going to give above and beyond, and I'm not going to expect anything in return in the slightest. Challenging. Next one. Do to others as you would have them do to you. He's really driving some things home to us. He's driving home to us that our concern for possessions should be so minimal that we wouldn't care if other people use our possessions or take our wealth and do not return them. And he gets it even further now with this overarching principle. Do to others as you would have them do to you. I think we teach the opposite, but really the reverse meaning. When I think of how I try to train my daughters, and you have the two of them fighting, and one of them does something to the other, what I do is I'll sit there and I'll say, now, is that how you wanted to be treated? Did you want to have something like, would you like it if your sister did that to you? That's not what he taught. We reverse this into the negative. Don't do to others what you don't want have done to you. That's how we typically reverse this around. And it doesn't say that. And that's typically what I want to do. I won't do things to other people that you don't want done back to you. And then we teach our kids that way. Do you think your sister enjoyed having a toy thrown at them? Would you like her to throw a toy at you? No, don't do that because you don't want that to happen to you. Good start, but not what Jesus taught. He teaches it in the positive. Do good. Do to another person what you want them to do to you. That is a great principle of dealing with people. When you are dealing with people at work who are driving you nuts. When you are dealing with people on the road, when you are dealing with people not only in the job, but in your home, in your family, with your friends, everywhere you go, imagine if you're in the grocery store and the clerk is driving you bananas. Treat them how you would want to be treated if you were standing in their shoes at that moment. And they don't want you treating them ugly. They'd probably enjoy some kind words or some good favor from you. They don't need our mouth. They don't need our lip. They don't need our ugly faces and our horrible slanderous words and our guttural remarks and whatever else that we say and do to people because we're sick and tired of how they're acting and we think we're justified. You want to treat others positively. Do good to them like you would want them to do good to you. If you were that clerk, what would you like your customers to be doing to you? If you were there on the job and you were in the reverse position, how would you like other people to handle that failure, that mistake that was just made? How would you like it if that was you on that end? And when we make the mistake, well, nobody's nice to us, but when they make the mistake, wham! Oh, man, you blew it. You're awful. You're slow. You're lazy. You're terrible. You stink. That's not what you wanted. Do good positively. Don't just refrain from doing bad. Do good positively to them, just as you would want that good to be done to you. Can you imagine what life tomorrow, think about all the stuff for the moment, take you out of this place for just a minute. Think about all the stuff you have to do tomorrow, all the places you have to go, all the jobs you have to do, the people you have to deal with. Can you imagine what tomorrow would look like if everybody did to others as they would have them do to you? Tomorrow would not be that bad of a day. If everybody did what is good to the other person, what did what was good and kind and said the right things and treated one another as they ought to be treated, how we would want to be treated and spoken the way we wish we were spoke to and did good just as we want to have good done to us, can you imagine what tomorrow would look like? It'd be a far different place. It would be a far different place. And often the reason we don't do that good and don't say the good is because we know nobody's going to respond back in kind to us. And so we just let it go. They're not going to do good to me, so why should I bother doing good to them? Because we'll never change the world and we'll never show Jesus if we don't. We will never bring people to Jesus if we don't. We have to do it despite the fact that they won't do it back. Which is what the rest of it talks about. When you get to verse 32, Jesus gives the reasoning behind why we love our enemies. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? I love this part. If you love people who love you only because they love you, Jesus just said, so what? If you love people, only those who love you back, big deal. You know, we think we're being such Christians because we love people who love us. Because we are so kind to our family. Because we are kind to one another here, these Christians here. Because we are kind to our friends. Jesus said, so what? The world does that. We think we're being Christians. Jesus says, nah, you're just being like everybody else. You love people that love you back? So what? Sinners do that. The world does that. That doesn't mark us as different in the slightest. If that's all we do. Look at the next sentence. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? If we only do good things to people who do good to us, Jesus just gave it again. So what? That doesn't make you a disciple. That's not Christianity. Everybody does good to people who do good to you. If all we ever do is wait for somebody to do good things to us and we think we'll respond in kind, big deal. That's not Christianity. That's just acting like a human. That's just being like the world. How about the third one? And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? If you give and you expect somebody to give it back or give some sort of repayment, you do this great good act, you take a meal to somebody, you give somebody some money who's in need, you give them some clothes, you fill up their gas tank, you do some kind act, but you expect them to respond with some kind of repayment. Not that they're going to necessarily repay you back and buy you a shirt next week, but they're going to do something good. And he says, so what? So what? The only reason we give is because we expect people to be kind and giving back. Then we've done nothing. Even sinners give with the expectation of a repayment. This is calling for doing good, speaking right, giving above and beyond, going the extra mile, going all the way in giving without expecting anything in return whatsoever to people who will not do the same. In fact, they will hate us, mistreat us, and persecute us in the process. We do it anyway. That's hard. That's hard. But that's the picture that he's giving to us, is that we are no different from the world. We are no different from the world if we only love those who love us, if we only lend and give to those who will repay, if we only say kind words to those who will say kind things back to us, that cannot be. We are showing ourselves that we are not disciples of Jesus, but we are of the world when we only love those who love us, when we only give to those that we deem worthy, to only do good to those who we think will do good back. We're just like everybody else, and we're not like Jesus. Look at his final instructions. He sums it all up. This is a good sermon when you sum it all up at the end. Good paragraph sermon right here that Jesus does. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. So he sums it up. Love your enemies, do good, lend, give, without expecting in return. Two things. One, your reward will be great. Jesus is saying, I know this isn't easy. There's nothing about this command that's simple. There's nothing that we're going to, no big deal. This is going to hurt. This is sacrifice. This is giving of ourselves. This is putting ourselves out there to act like this, to do good to those who hate us, to give to those who would just as soon see us wallow in the mud, to be kind and not insulting, to not retaliate, to not respond in kind. Your reward will be great. Jesus is picturing, I'll give you a great inheritance for your sacrifice. Don't put your emphasis on the physical possessions, on, oh, it's all mine. I can't give. I can't spare any. I can't share. I can't give to you. Your reward will be great. And I like the second one as well. And you'll be children of the Most High. If you've been with me on Sunday nights in the Romans study, this will ring powerful to your ears. To be sons of God. You will be in God's family. You will be his children. When we act like what Jesus is saying here in loving our enemies, you are showing yourself to be children of God, that you belong in God's family, that you are joined with God. And the reverse is true. If we are not loving our enemies and not doing what Jesus prescribes here, we are not children of the Most High. We are showing ourselves to be of the world. We are not sons of God. We're not showing ourselves to be part of God's family. We're acting like the black sheep on the outside. Here's Christ with his example. And what are we doing? We're not acting like him. Because that's the picture that he concludes with. Why do we do this? Look at it halfway through that paragraph. Because he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Why should we possibly care about our enemies? Why should we do good to our enemies? Why should we love those who hate us? Why should we give to them? Why should we give to them even above and beyond? And to give them to them without expecting anything in return? Here's why. Because that's what God did to you. For while we were still enemies, Christ died for the ungodly. That's why. Because we are enemies of God. And look at what God did for us. He did good. He gave. He gave above and beyond. And didn't expect that at that moment while Christ is walking around that everybody would throw accolades on him and do good. They killed him for it. We need to see ourselves as the enemies when we are having such a hard time dealing with our enemies. We have to understand that we are the same God saw us as enemies. We broke his laws. We violated his commands. We were vile and wretched. We spit in his face. We didn't care anything about the Son. We lived for ourselves. And God came and decided to send his Son anyway. He did good. He gave. Jesus is not asking us to do anything in this paragraph that he has not already done for us. And I hope that's the linchpin to help us to love our enemies, is Jesus already did it. And we can follow in those footsteps, leading to that final sentence, be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. We needed mercy from God. He showed us love and goodness and kindness and gave and gave and gave. And we must do the same to show mercy to our enemies, to show kindness and goodness. Jesus did it for me. I must do it for the world and expect nothing back in return. Pull your songbooks out. And we are singing this song in plead and in prayer for you to come to Jesus, to see how much he loves you. He died for us while we were enemies, while we were separated, while we were good for nothing, vile, wretched people. He died and he gave. He loves you so much that he wants you to come and follow him, serve him with all of your heart. Believe that he is the Son of God and confess that he is that. And turn your life away from sin, a life away from selfishness, to serve the risen Jesus with all of our heart. And that we will change our lives. I named this sermon this way so that none of you would go home thinking that I'm saying this is easy. This is commanding for us a major overhaul in our thinking, in our actions, and how we treat people. It is difficult. See the example of Jesus. He did it for us. We can do it for others. Let us put that at the forefront of our mind and how he gave for us. Come to Christ by then being immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins. If you're ready to become a Christian, if you want to respond to this invitation, let somebody next to you know, I need to be baptized for the forgiveness of my sins, or you can walk forward right now as we stand and sing this song.